Luca.
Thank you. My name is Lucas Haig with Kansas State University, Northwest Area Agronomist. So I serve 26 counties in Northwest and North Central Kansas. My collaborators on the study are fortunately both with us here today, and so they're available to correct me as needed. Jeannie Falk-Jones is multi-county agronomist. She serves the three counties in far Northwest bordering Colorado. And Alan Schlegel, who you heard from already today, is agronomist in charge at the Tribune Branch Station. So a very old topic to those of you in the room from the Northern Plains, but a very new topic to us, and one that, quite frankly, we'd rather not have to deal with, but such is life. So the looming problem, and some photos coming from Jeff Bradshaw with the UNL Panhandle Station, as the wheat stem sawfly pest has been continuing to adapt and move further south and east. Last year in the Kimball area, 30% infestations resulting in 100% lodging in some of these fields. And so certainly, we think about wheat truly is the cornerstone of our dry land cropping systems. What does this do to us from a profitability standpoint, from a residue standpoint? This is bad on a whole number of, a whole number of fronts. 2015 CSU wheat stem sawfly survey, still really the hot spot in this kind of this Highway 14 corridor between Sterling and Fort Collins, where in 2010 was really the first indications of the pest in Colorado. It has continued to move further south, even as far down into Baca County. And new this year to us is a few hits of some low levels detected in northwestern Kansas, so Cheyenne, Rawlins, and Wallace counties, all of which are in Jeannie and I's territories and served by the Tribune Station as well. So the concern is building rather rapidly for us. So we started on this. So again, our rationale, we knew this problem was coming. The control options other than solid stem varieties, to me, are largely unpalatable. We're talking about tillage. We're talking about burning. We're talking about things that are largely very counterproductive to what we're trying to do in our dry land cropping systems. And interestingly enough, a previous talk I heard today actually showed that burning and tillage aren't that effective of management strategies either. And so, again, we know it's going to take some time to develop regionally adapted varieties. The last information I had from our breeding program and UNL said they were about 5 years out. CSU had some material that were in yield trials this year. But again, we're a ways away from where we need to be. And so ultimately, as Alan and Jeannie and I started thinking about this in the fall of 2013, our question ultimately was, could solid stem varieties that are currently in use in Montana and the northern Great Plains, could we bring them down here and use them as a stopgap measure until we got some more regionally adapted material? For those of you not familiar with solid stem wheat, there's just kind of a diagram there. I believe that's CSU Denali versus Judy, one of the newer releases from up at Montana State. You can kind of see the, the hollow portion there, the Denali versus the solid. And solid stem wheats, it's not a binary trait. There's a continuum of how solid that stem actually is, and places like Montana State rate those at a number of their locations in terms of their the thickness. Interestingly, some of the work UNL's been doing has shown that thickness is not only variety specific, but there's a large, not surprisingly, an environmental component to that as well, that even within the same crop year from site to site, that thickness can vary a fair bit. So we established three study locations. Herndon is just right up on the state line there in Rawlins County, and then at the experiment stations at Colby and Tribune. And again, as it turns out, we're in close proximity to where where our issues are emerging. All of this is within the context of a wheat corn fallow or wheat sorghum fallow rotation. We've picked four regionally adapted varieties, and of course the problem with time is if we were starting this today, that list would look different. 111 is falling out of favor and will continue to do so. 112, the same way, we'd probably replace these with bird or grain field or some of the varieties coming on to replace those. And then we got a set of solid stem varieties from Montana State. And then we also did get one of their hollow stem varieties, Norris. And so we kind of had another interesting entry in there just to compare, because it is known in the Northern Plains that there is some yield drag associated with that solid stem trait. So having a Northern Plains hollow stem in there gave us something else to look at. So that's just source and year of introduction there to give you an idea of the materials the varieties we were looking at. So we've got five site years, two at Tribune, two at Colby, one at Herndon, four reps everywhere. Generally, we're working with 5 by 40 foot plots. We're seeding at either 60 or 90 pounds to the acre. We're machine harvesting for yield, taking biomass and yield component data. And then at Tribune, we're also able to get heading date at that location as well. Spring conditions, this came as a surprise to me when I actually put the numbers to this. We perceived these springs as being relatively cool on the entire run. So this is from February 1 to 30 of June. Over that entire run, and this Tribune and Herndon data looks very similar to this. All in all, we were slightly above average, but what we have not had yet in this study is really where we get slammed with heat at the end of that grain fill period. And not having that condition yet is something that's still looming in the back of our minds as we're looking at this data. So the things that are in bold, this is just the main effect test, and the things that are in bold obviously are significant. If we look at overall biomass and 14 Colby and Tribune, some weak significance there. What's driving that in 2015 is largely winter injury that we experienced, and that's a large part of why we're running this another set of years. We took a pretty significant winter injury event in the 15 crop, and we'll hit on a few of these things more in detail. But again, a lot of these years, not surprisingly, yield components are showing up as differences among these varieties, and we'll hit on a few of those highlights. But looking at 2014 at Colby, if we look at our adapted, the mean of our adapted, 74 bushel wheat, a heck of a wheat year for us really at Colby there. And then we start getting into some of our solid stem wheats. No statistical difference in a lot of these varieties. We've got Warhorse, Bearpaw, and Judy all really right there with our locally adapted material. And so that, quite honestly, I think came as a surprise to all of us. Even though it was a cool spring, it favored later maturing hybrids, that we were not expecting to see stuff on par with our regionally adapted varieties. But again, so the mean of the solid stems were right at 89% of our regionally adapteds. Tribune in 2015, we got a few more differences showing up in this data. We get into things like Norris and Bearpaw, significantly less than any of our regionally adapted. But yet we've got Warhorse, Judy, Bynum all hanging right in there with our locally adapted wheats. And so again, it kind of gives us another hint. Again, right there about that 89%, that set of solid stems yielding 89% of our regionally adapted. Colby in 2015, a lot more variability in there. This is a factor of both winter keel and stripe rust, and we both in our regionally adapted, so this study unfortunately did not get fungicide applied to it. And in both regionally adapted and the Montana materials, we had a wide range of susceptibility to stripe rust. And so that's partially driving this. Also driving this is differences in winter survivability. But on average, the solid stems right there with the adapted material. Herndon, and you'll notice one thing sticking out at Herndon, and again, bringing new varieties in, TAM 114 is another one. If we were starting this study today, could be in the set. And this is a case of TAM 114, and last year had excellent winter survival and had resistance to stripe rust, and so that's why we're seeing it really shine compared to some of these others. But if you take 114 out of the picture and look at the set we've been testing through time versus the rest of these, really pretty much on par. Again, We've been able to have quite a range in yield levels here. We've had all the way from 70 plus bushel yields to here kind of in the mid 20s, so a wide range of situations where we've seen a fair bit of comparability. Our solid stems, 90% of our adapteds, and honestly, if 114 wasn't in there, that percentage would be quite a bit higher if we keep in the same set as what we'd been talking about previously. Tribune 2014, again, some pretty good yields. But this is where we probably had the biggest step difference between our regionally adapted and the solid stems was in Tribune and 14. So 66%, right at two-thirds. Again, this is probably maybe more in line with what we thought we would see all the time when we started this study. And what's interesting is really the consistency in all the solid stems, not a lot of variability between those varieties versus we actually have a fair bit more variability in our regionally adapted in that given year. Digging in a little bit, looking at the Tribune 2014 yield components, no significant difference in above ground biomass, but yet beans we have yield differences. We know that we have differences then in harvest index, of course, ranging from a top end of 0.34 on Denali, our bottom end being 0.21 on Judy. So that's largely on Judy's being driven by a couple factors. We really dropped off on kernels per head. If you see here, up in the 16s to 18 on our regionally adapted material, down to a little over 9.5 kernels per head on the Judy. There's something else going on here, and that is if you go back to the heads per acre, okay? And so there's not, even though we seeded this on a weight basis and not a seeds per acre basis, we're seeing much, in this particular year, there is a much larger difference in heads per acre in the Judy than what the seeding rate would make up. So a lot higher tillering, it appeared, in the Judy that year to get that increased head count. And so perhaps this large reduction in kernels per head is due to this significantly higher number of heads that we had out there. Along with that, kernel weight, consistently we've seen reduced kernel weight in the solid stem materials. And bare pollen Jeannot consistently have showed up across all site years as being towards the low end of the spectrum on kernel weight. But in general, we've consistently seen lighter kernel weights in the solid stem varieties. Grain yield across years, if we pull all the data together, our solid stems are yielding 87% of our regionally adapted. Norris is not included in any of these. I'm just comparing the solid stems versus our regionally adapted locals. Some variability in there, but again, we've got Warhorse and Judy, Bynum, really right there in the same range of any of our regionally adapted material. And so to me, that's fairly encouraging. Revisiting the kernel weight issue, again, Bear Paw and Jeannot here showing up. Judy, the mean is quite high, but it's probably had as much variability as any of the varieties in terms of its kernel weight across the five site years. And that kind of plays into overall, Judy's probably been the most variable overall in yield for us. It's either been at the top of the pack of the solid stems or the bottom. And I don't know the variety well enough to come up with a reason for why, but that's kind of what we've seen. Heading data from Tribune, really not as big a spread as you might think. We know Tamil 12 is going to be early for us. This is day of May. So started on May 15th with TAM 112, Warhorse being the latest generally in both years. So almost a full week and a half, 2 weeks, pushing 2 weeks later in 2014. But if we get in here at Denali, one of our later maturing varieties, we're right in there next to Bear Paw, Bynum, at Norris, actually towards the earlier end. Norris actually being earlier than some of our regional varieties. So not near the spread we were expecting there either. From an extension standpoint, we've also placed the solid stem varieties into our county demonstration plots. These are unreplicated plots put out by the local agents. Largely, the most useful purpose of them is to serve as a place for local field days to discuss wheat varieties. And so that's provided us a really nice platform to discuss the wheat stem softfly issue as a whole. It's allowed us to involve our entomologists into those discussions. And I think it's been actually having that there, and it makes a really neat show and tell piece to pass around solid stem wheat for folks to look at. So it's been a very nice complement into both Jeannie and I's extension activities. So in general, solid stem varieties, we were anywhere from 66 to 99% of our regionally adapted, 87% on average. Based on this data so far, it would appear that we could use these varieties as a stopgap measure. Another thing that came up and that producers had a lot of questions on, and that is, what about the residue longevity of these solid stem varieties? Will the stubble last longer? And that's something, actually, there was probably more questions and interest in that than there was about wheat stem softfly. And so this last year we harvested all the plots with stripper head, and we're hoping to be able to take a look at that stubble at row crop planting time and see if we can detect that. Bill Gray at Montana Foundation Seed and also the wheat breeding crew up there has been tremendously helpful to us, as well as the guys at Westbred, Allen's crew at Tribune, and then the Castens family are our cooperators at the Herndon location. So I think, I don't know if we have time for questions, but all right. Yes, sir. So in the Kansas side of it, so back to that map, those densities were really quite low, and this is really the first year that they've been detected in any of the surveys, and so we don't have that. Now, Colorado State has been nesting solid stem varieties in their wheat performance tests for the last several years, and so we have a really nice set of data to look at from there. And if you look at that data, these same relationships are really quite similar to what the data out of the Colorado performance test would show, and that I think everyone's a little bit surprised at how well these solid stem wheats have done for us. But again, the caveat is we've not had that brutally hot grain fill period yet, at least in the time period we've been looking at it. Yes, sir.
So you saw David Weaver's presentation this morning, I think.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. And you saw the, you know, for us, the real big deal has been getting parasitoid populations established, and which provide an actual check on the soft fly. Are you guys looking at that yet, or what's the situation?
So my cop out is I'm not an entomologist, so.
We are.
I know, J.P. Michaud, our entomologist out of Hayes, is really our lead on this, and I know that's something that the parasitoids and the other beneficials is something he focuses on a lot, and so I know that's going to be part of his survey efforts in the region. But with the talk this morning, I enjoyed hearing about the successes they're having with tall stubble. I mean, stripper harvest and tall stubble is something we already promote for a variety of reasons, and so if that's beneficial to the parasitoids, that certainly is working in our favor. Kind of an aside to that, from a rotation standpoint, one thing that was concerning, Jeff Bradshaw at UNL Panhandle was saying they're having issues with nesting in these wheat summer crop fallow rotations. It's not just about the fresh wheat stubble, but about what's coming off the neighbor's wheat stubble that's going to row crop. And so it's a little, we've got some added complexities over the wheat fallow areas. Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Can you catch him after?